Greg, are you okay? You're okay. I was thinking about you about an hour and a half ago watching the Marty Brodeur retirement ceremony. I'm thinking, watching Marty Brodeur retire with the St. Louis Blues alumni all around him, essentially, the St. Louis Blues backdrop. Do you feel like you just, you know, like walked in on your girlfriend with another guy?
It's like building the Lincoln Memorial in the middle of Berlin.
I don't know that it's that drastic. It's maybe a little bit surreal.
It's surreal. It's obviously not the coda that you wanted. And, there's word that's come out since that press conference that he's going to be part of the 95 Devils celebration in the beginning of March with the rest of that alumni. So, obviously, the notion is at that point, everybody will have a chance to celebrate him. But, look, you know, we talked about this yesterday. Like, they turned their back on him, basically, as a franchise. I mean, they went out and got Corey Schneider in the second year of his two-year deal to be the next goalie. Yeah. Made it awkward for him. They tried to do all these things to make him feel better. They didn't bring him back this season, which was the right decision. He was left out floating in the ocean, thinking he had still something left in the tank, wanted to keep playing. And the Blues threw him a life preserver. And, you know, I don't fault him for any of it. I don't fault him for retiring as a Blue. I don't fault him for taking a job with that team. Is it a little weird in the prepared statement we're going to hear in a second that he didn't mention the Devils? Yeah. Yeah, it's a little weird. But if he wants to needle them now, I think he's allowed, just so long as we all know where his heart is. And his heart's in New Jersey. And I don't think that's debatable.
I was having a conversation with someone 2 or 3 weeks ago, just about people in every industry, whether it's in our industry, whether it's in hockey, whether it's in widgets, doesn't matter what. Do you ever really know when you're done? It's such an interesting question because, you know, when Marty joined the National Hockey League, right? Comes in from St. Hyacinth, right? Uh-huh. I mean, who was there? Chris Terreri was there.
Was he ever?
Craig Billington was there.
The Biller.
Right? Like, it's the way things go. And when you first start in any industry, you look at the guys that are on top, the guys that are there, and you see, oh, these old dogs. When are they just going to admit that their time is gone and hand it over to the young guys, hand it over to the next generation? And then you get to the top, and you become those guys that the young kids make fun of.
Right.
And then, like, what happens inside you? Do you say to yourself, I'm done? Or do you say to yourself, I'm not going to stop fighting?
I'm not going to stop fighting. And listen, it's still soul crushing for me when someone who's like in high school calls me like some establishment media blowhard. Like, wait, no.
Oh, you're not. Yahoo's pretty mainstream, dude. I hate to break the news. It's true.
In Marty's case, it's interesting you bring that up because at no point during his career until the very end was there any competition. There was never any competition. They cleared out competition. You know, when Billington was there and he was doing well, that was never a thing that they were going to let Marty have to deal with.
And they would never draft a goaltender.
You never drafted a goaltender.
Yeah.
It was always veteran guys like Van Beesbrook and Hedberg and Kevin Weeks that were there to support him.
Who did really well.
Yeah.
The year that he was injured, that Marty was injured. Oh.
Well, Clemenson. Clemenson's the guy who did really well the year Marty was injured.
But Weeks he did too, though, didn't he?
He might have.
I think both of them did pretty good.
Corey Schwab. I mean, all these guys were there to be the clear, distant number two for Marty until Schneider arrived.
Yeah.
So not only do you have a situation where you re-sign with the team for 2 years, and in year two, they replace you, but it's the first time you've ever been replaced.
You see, I've never been great at anything, so I don't know the mentality. I don't know the headspace. But when you've been great, like the greatest or amongst the greatest, maybe you just can't admit that things are done. Like, you have that drive, and you've been on top, and that's a position you're accustomed to, and it's a position that you've earned. Maybe it's just, like, next to impossible to say, you know what, New Jersey was right. My time's come and gone. I really shouldn't be. Like, eventually you get there. Like, hindsight 2020 with age comes perspective and that kind of wisdom. I'm sure Marty's going to get to the point where he says, I don't know what I was thinking 15 years ago. You know what? They were probably right.
Some guys can do it. Alfie did it. I mean, Alfie's body sort of was telling him what time it was, you know?
Yeah, that thing went south, though.
It's either pride or it's body. You know, if your body's breaking down, if you're having too many significant injuries, you know, you can't play at the same pace.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, though. That drive that allows you to get to the top is probably the drive that denies you the reality that it's done. Because you said, like, that drive doesn't go away.
No, it doesn't.
You know, like, when you talk about the nature of genius, remember the example, I can't remember who said it, it may have been, like, Camille Paglia. You know, the same genius that drove Mozart also is the same genius that drove Jack the Ripper. You never let go of that drive, never goes anywhere. The circumstances around your life change. But I don't think that drive, that thing that is so foreign to most of us, ever leaves people of greatness.
So what do we say then about Nick Lidstrom and Derek Jeter?
Those are freaks. Lidstrom I can speak of with more authority than Jeter. I can speak about him sort of anecdotally and from an outside.
Right.
But I really think that Lidstrom is a freak, because who does that? Who walks away when you're third in Norris Trophy balloting? Who calls it a career? You're still there. I know. But then again, you know, Swedes, I mean, I've always had this love affair with the Swedish hockey player. They seem to me just to have more of a grounding than any hockey player of any other nationality, and sort of understand when it's time. Now, having said that, you can say, well, for every Nick Lidstrom, there's a Peter Forsberg who just kept trying to come back and trying to find a skate that fit, and trying to find a foot that would fit into a boot. Like, I'm sure he would have. Uh-huh. Like, I'm sure if you told Peter Forsberg, dude, there's no skate that's going to fit that foot, I'm sure Forsberg at one point said, well, maybe if I just chopped off this foot and got another one that would fit a boot, do you think we could do it that way? Like, I'm sure he had that type of drive and said that to himself.
And there would be somebody in the NHL going, well, you know, he's still got the hands. I mean, he's still got the hands. The hands are still his.
You know, maybe if we just got rid of offsides when Forsberg played and just let him play dots down in the offensive zone, we could still have Peter Forsberg in the NHL.
And by the way, that's the first thing they should do for the All-Star game next year is get rid of offside. I know there weren't many of them.
That's the point.
Get rid of all rules.
Get rid of the lines. Rules. Get rid of all the lines. Make it like roller hockey.
Yeah.
RHI rules.
Or NHL 94 where you shut off the offsides. That's one thing. Let's talk about that. Let's cherry pick a little bit more. Make it not look like a hockey game. That's my new thing about the All-Star game.
Yeah?
Don't make it look like a hockey game. And that would be more entertaining than watching a thing. It's like eating a shitty piece of pizza. Like, it looks like pizza. It has all of our favorite toppings on it, but
just don't
it's cardboard.
Just don't call it pizza. Just make it a total sideshow. You have like Donkey Kong style Mike Babcock throwing.
They need to turn it into a calzone with buffalo wings inside of it. They need to turn it into some crazy amalgamation of things that we like.
Okay,
in
so
order for me to get excited about the All-Star.
You're a left-hand shot for the All-Star game. You're a right-hand shot. So finally, Gordie Howe and Chris Chelios would dominate.
Make it bizarro game. Have all the forwards play D. Have all the D play forward, and have the goalies be centers. Just
remember
doing up like that.
Once upon a time, watching the Maple Leafs practice in like '93, and being amazed at how Dave Andrechuk couldn't, because Burns would do that, flip the positions, being amazed at how Dave Andrechuk could not skate backwards. I'm like, how do you get to the NHL and you can't skate backwards?
Well.
And then you score 50 goals.
Here's why. Because skating forward to the crease and then turning around doesn't require any skating backwards.
That's good. Back check.
It's
okay.
Skate forward and a pivot.
Back checking. Where's the crane? Where's the crane? I got a back check. Someone pick me up. It's Phil Esposito style. Back check. Where's the crane?
He's like a remote control car where the R doesn't work. Just
listen,
the F and the two arrows.
I got to tell everyone, and listen, Greg's, you know, writing, we're all familiar with him. We've all read tons of Greg's pieces, but go out of your way to read Greg's piece about Martin Brodeur, the pride of New Jersey. I had no idea, and I just finished it right before we started the podcast today. I had no idea at how, as someone from New Jersey, I mean, you get some sense, but I had no sense of how much you felt like a second-class citizen next to the Rangers and Rangers fans.
Oh, it's something that every New Jerseyan and every Devils fan can relate to, I think. I mean, the dynamic in growing up in New Jersey as a sports fan is like nothing else, in the sense that...
But hang on. Has
the entirety of the media, all your friends... Everybody, outsiders, it doesn't matter. They all treat you like you're second class.
But hang on a second.
You turn on the radio, and good luck hearing anything about your state's teams, despite the fact that you know a vast majority of that listenership to WFAN is coming from New Jersey.
Has all the winning changed that inferiority complex, though? Like, you just went through the golden age of the Devils. Has any of it changed?
Oh, no, it totally has.
Okay. So it is different.
It's like I understand the
Ron Lowe years, the Mickey Mouse. I get all that. I was you know there for that, watching that. But has all this winning changed it in New Jersey?
It did. It gradually did. I mean, like, you know what, and that was the point of the piece, is that Marty's success and his contribution to that success was a direction changing event for the franchise and for the fan base. Because it was real shitty growing up a Devils fan and having to get grief from Rangers fans all the time and having, you know, 60% of the people in your building at all times being Rangers fans. It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
And so the idea that not only was this a guy who contributed to the franchise finding an identity and having a sustained dynastic success for upwards of 10 years and a little bit beyond that, not only was his value there, but like I wrote, his value was in having a guy that you could put up and say he belongs in the pantheon of great athletes and he's ours. You know, Dr. J, as a Nets fan, was never a Net. I mean, he was a Net for three seasons, and it was when they played in New Jersey. Yeah. Jason Kidd was not a Net. Vince Carter was not a Net. The Devils' big stars, Stevens, and, you know, before him,
but
Zazny,
don't you find it?
And Fetisov, they all came from different places.
Yeah.
And he was the first guy that we could point to and say, drafted a Devil, spent a year in Utica, was a Devil for the vast majority of his career, save for seven regrettable games of the Blues. He's the first guy that I grew up watching for one of my teams that I could say was born and bred by the franchise.
There is a weird thing in sports, though, and this has existed pretty much, you know, primarily the past, I don't know, 25 years, where the feeling among sports fans is, don't end your career with the team it started. Do us a favor, at the end of your career, go somewhere else so we can get something for you. Right?
Right, yeah. The Matt Sundin theorem.
Even though he was originally Quebec Nordique, he wasn't even really a cradle-to-grave Toronto Maple Leaf.
No, but I mean, he was clearly a Leaf by that point. He was a Leaf legend.
See, there's hardly ever a hue and cry to end the career in the market. There's a hue and cry now to do the right thing. Waive your no trade. Go somewhere else. Let us get a second round pick. Give us a third line left winger for you for our playoff push. See, I'm with you on that piece. Like, there's a lot to be said as far as building identity and building a bridge between athlete and community for just staying. Finish your career in that jersey.
Well, it's like I said, I mean, you know, when you're a Devils fan or it's not a Devils fan specific thing, but like a fan of any team, for those of us who still go out and buy jerseys with names on the back, the question that becomes, well, what name am I going to get? What guy's still going to be here? My dad has a Jets Brett Favre jersey.
Just, whoa, you know, wow, wow,
exactly,
wow.
Exactly.
Holy smokes.
So, I mean, you got to take that into account. So, you know, there's a ton of Devils fans that have Brodeur jerseys, and they have Brodeur jerseys because they sat down and said, well, he's going to be here.
Yeah.
As much as I love Kovalchuk, I mean, in that contract, maybe he won't always be here. I'm not gonna get that Doug Gilmore jersey because I don't think he's gonna retire. Now, so on and so forth.
Anyone ever dumb enough to buy a Mike Sillinger jersey, thinking he's gonna stick around for a while? Anyone out there with a Sillinger jersey? Okay, here's the thing, and maybe this is because of things like hockey pools. But don't you get the sense that everyone considers themselves to be a mini general manager of their own team? And where once upon a time, it was almost distasteful to see your heroes, whether they're in the prime or whether they're close to the clubhouse of their career, get traded. Like, it was distasteful for a lot of people to see, I'll just take my example growing up, to see Lanny McDonald in a Colorado Rockies uniform. It was distasteful to see Boreas Salming with the Red Wings. It was distasteful to see Darryl Sittle with the Philadelphia Flyers, to Mike Palmateer as a Washington Capital. Like, it was really distasteful. I think
Barney as a Blue was distasteful for a lot of people. I really think people had a problem with it. And that's why I think there's been so much examination. I mean, to the point where I think it's overshadowed this moment where we should take a step back and appreciate the career he had. Mm-hmm. This over-examination of his relationship with the Devils because people can't wrap their brains around the fact that he stood in front of a Blues logo with Bernie Federko standing next to him instead of Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah, and Brett Hull.
I think it's
one
of the reasons why that got so much press in the last week is because there was this sort of, why is he wearing that jersey aspect to his retirement.
Yeah.
But to answer your point, though, I really think it depends on where the franchise is at the moment of a legendary player's decision to retire or keep playing. Yeah. And almost, I think it also speaks to the relationship that player has with the franchise. I mean, I don't know anybody in Dallas that was clamoring for the team to trade Mike Modano in his last season, in what they thought could be his last season. I know a lot of people in Dallas that were really pissed off that he became a Red Wing. I don't know anybody in New Jersey that was saying we should trade Marty for assets despite the team not going anywhere, because I think we all were hoping that he'd retire as a Devil. So it really all depends on where the team is. It really all depends on what the perception is of where that athlete is in their career. And it really all depends, I think, on the athlete's relationship with the city. Because you're right, in some cases, for whatever reason, it makes more sense than in other cases to trade away your legend and get something for him.
It's not a punchline yet, but don't you get the feeling that, I don't know, pick however many years, it's going to be a punchline when we talk about Martin Brodeur and say, oh yeah, the St. Louis Blues goaltender.
Well, it might be, but I mean, it also helps that, you know, Gretzky was with the Blues too.
Grant Fuhr.
Yeah, there was a lot of weirdness in the Blues. As far as guys that shouldn't wear that jersey but did.
It's a great book to be written out there.
What's that?
Of the St. Louis Blues and the history of guys that have floated through. I mean, you look at the expansion year of 67, like all the way up. And you look at, and not just players, though, like Scotty Bowman, you know, Jim Devolano. Like, it is a pretty interesting story. The history of St. Louis Blues is one of the more fascinating ones. You know, they were the original Broad Street Bullies. And they always had good goaltending, and they graduated maybe the greatest coach in the history of the game to the Montreal Canadiens and Scotty Bowman.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fascinating organization. It would have been nice if somewhere along the road they would have picked up a Stanley Cup. But maybe they were because the story of the Blues was always that team that for, like, 27 years in a row made it to the playoffs, a few times picked up a President's Trophy, but were never able to win the Big Burrito, ever.
Jared Dillon writes in, the cap is going to ruin team loyalty. Every player is now an asset, plus parity means any team can win.
Don't disagree at all.
Don't disagree at all. But I do think that it takes a player like Brodeur took less money.
For a lot of years. Yeah,
he was
the one who always said, you know, and he bought what Lou was selling. We take less so we can. It happened in Detroit. I mean, it happened in Boston for all those years, and I think a lot of players resented Ray Bourque because of it, because he was the sort of benchmark for Harry Sinden for salary, and he always came in light. It's happened before, but you're right. Marty always came in lighter than he should have.
So I think there's still something to be said.
You could almost make the point, too, that Wayne Gretzky always came in light.
Sure.
Everywhere he went.
Yeah. So I think you can make the argument that there might be franchise players that stick with their franchise for the entirety of their tenure if they don't price themselves out. And that takes a special kind of guy. Look, the circumstances that would have to happen for there to be another Marty Brodeur are very hard to repeat. Okay, the combination of longevity, on a winning team,
and innovation, yes. And innovation too.
Innovation. Personnel in front of him, system that he played. All of these things led to where he went in his career. And like we talked about yesterday, I mean, like, that's why it's hard to wrap your brain around someone else amassing that total of wins as a goalie or amassing that number of shutouts as a goalie, because you get the feeling that they're never going to let the game slip back into those standards.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this on the way in this morning. I thought to myself, waiting for the Marty press conference, so what's really unique about Marty? What won't we see again? And I thought to myself, like, how – it might be a stupid question because it's hard to predict innovation, but what can a goaltender do now to profoundly change the game?
Huh, that's a good question.
Like, honestly, what is there? Like, there have been goaltenders. I mentioned Jacques Plante yesterday on the podcast, but there were some before him that could rudimentally handle the puck. Jacques Plante was the first that could really do it with some authority. Okay? And Marty took that to a whole different level. Mike Smith can handle it well. Now, of course, the story of Ron Hextall is well told. So we see Marty Turco, certainly. We see the trapezoids. That's a reflection to the skill set that two particular goaltenders had at that time in the NHL. And really, it was for one, Marty Brodeur and the New Jersey Devils. But what could a goaltender do now, given the way the rules exist? Goaltender can't join the rush. Sorry, got to leave you here at center ice. Like, what can a goalie do now profoundly different to innovate the game the way that Marty did? Or is it you can only just sort of refine what Marty did and become, like Mike Smith has, that much better of a stick handler?
Well, and the thing about Marty is that you have to first start at a point where you admit that the stick handling was sort of a mutant freakish thing. Which brings me to think that the next innovation for a goalie is going to be something that's not a goalie's skill set necessarily being honed and doing something different. It's going to be a guy who is of a different proportion, let's say, mm-hmm. than other goalies. We're going to find some guy who's 6'3 and built like Bufflin, and yet he can tend goal with the flexibility of Roberto Luongo. And that's going to be the innovation.
It's going to be like, it's going to be a combination of like Ben Bishop and Dominic Hasek.
It is going to be some dude who like Roethlisberger, like some guy who is just so big,
so huge, yeah,
and that he's physically imposing and can't be moved and wins every physical battle, but also has a freakish Hasekian flexibility.
You know, it's funny.
That would be the thing to me that we would never have seen before that could in theory happen.
There's a lot of guys. It's funny because now netminders are some of the most wildly athletic of all the positions. And there's a number of guys in the gym, like young kids, that'll do Supermans and raise up, like, you know, you do Supermans, you lie on your stomach and raise up your arms, your legs, going sort of essentially backwards at the same time. Mm-hmm. That I swear are folding themselves in half while they're lying on the. I'm like, how are you that big and that flexible? So that I could see. I was thinking some sort of more along the lines of, are we going to see like a goaltender who's amazing for whatever reason at winning faceoffs, taking defensive zones, or draws? Like, oh yeah, the goaltender's going to handle this one.
Oh, all right. Break for the Brodeur talk to talk about what happened last night. A little bit more sugar-free or coffee with that Penguins-Capitals rivalry, which could very well be a first-round playoff matchup in theory. He is Chuck Lindley of CSN Washington, and he joins us now to talk about the Caps and the Pens and all the fun last night. Chuck, let's start off with an easy one. Scale of 1 to 10, how horrific was that call on Ovechkin last night? Chuck?
We don't have Chuck.
Oh, there I am.
There's
Chuck.
There's Chuck.
There he is. Hey, Chuck, we were asking how bad, scale of 1 to 10, that call on Ovechkin was last night.
Given the score of the game and the time of the game.
Well, it's a penalty for being bigger than somebody else, right? Is that what it's 2 minutes for being bigger than the guy that hit you?
So give me the context of the game. Give me when the penalty was called and what would have happened if it wasn't called.
Well, I was playing the game, and the Penguins were obviously frustrated because they had not scored. They had been shut out by the Caps the last time they faced them. They're trailing 4-0, and, you know, it's just Kobe's carrying the puck along the left wall. There's a big hit on him, and Christian Ehrhoff, I think, gives him, what, 3 or 4 inches and maybe 20 pounds, and Ovi's just defending himself, and Ehrhoff goes down, and because he's on the ice, Ovi gets the penalty. He gets what, 2 for holding and 2 for roughing? I don't get that.
Roughing was with Sill. That wasn't on that play.
He got 2 for, what was it? You got a double minor or something, right?
Didn't get a double minor. He got 2 minor penalties, but they're on separate plays because of the big scrum ensued, and he got the roughing on Sill.
So you got the roughing call on Sill after being attacked. It was a terrible call. I mean, let's be honest here.
There's two ways you look at that one. You look at the actual call itself, which if it's a 1-1 game, that's not made. But in a 4-0 game, that call is made every time by a good referee.
It's a game management call. It's a game management bullshit call. It's not a penalty.
Are we just gonna start inventing calls?
It's not a penalty, God damn it! You're such a fucking apologist sometimes.
No, I'm not. Well, you're such a hater sometimes.
It's not about hating on one guy, Jeff. It's about a guy inventing a phantom fucking penalty.
Right. Okay. Because game management calls don't exist in the NHL. Gotcha.
No, they do exist. Yeah, they shouldn't exist.
Now, the NHL runs like this. If a guy is on the ice, the arm goes up. That's what happens in today's NHL. They react later. They want to call a penalty, and then they'll explain it later after they get a replay. So anytime a guy is lying on the ice, the hand goes up.
Those calls have been made for decades. Game management calls. You can rail against all you want, but talk to any supervisor or talk to Stephen Walkum. What does the NHL want to do with their officials? So you can vent on the one official all you want.
It's not about the one official. It's like a pimple on the ass of hockey. It is an embarrassing call that everyone sees and everyone scratches their head. And yeah, it comes down to one guy making the call, unfortunately, yet again. But at the end of the day, it's an embarrassment for hockey to have these guys make phantom penalties.
Unformation
bias. Have us all questioning exactly what their job is on the ice if it's not to actually look at a play and evaluate it and enforce the rules rather than enforcing what might happen in that situation if they don't make the call. It's nonsense.
Hockey is a fluid sport which needs that type of officiating because if you didn't have that type of officiating, it would be 60 minutes of power play hockey.
It's an entire side industry of fan fiction they could be writing. Instead of trying to do the job of officiating.
Okay, well,
hockey.
Then go away and stop watching it if it offends you that much. It's okay.
Oh,
the game will go on. The game will keep going on.
Wait, Chuck's there? Hey, Chuck, listen.
Yeah, I'm just letting you guys battle out.
What kind of game was that for the Capitals last night? What kind of statement was that for the Capitals last night?
Well, I think Barry Trotz could have done a lot of things. They'd lose four straight. They look terrible doing it. They allow 17 goals in four games. And Trotz could have just messed up every line.
We got to call Chuck back. Call him back.
We clearly didn't want to hear Mom and Dad fight.
From game one. That's all right. You don't like game management calls? I have no problem with them.
Yeah, I mean, it goes beyond who made the call. We have a genuine disagreement about game management in a hockey game.
But the thing is, it has happened from day one. Like, this isn't something that's
doesn't
new
mean that
in
it's
the game.
Right.
I think it is right.
Because it's done. If you want to use the old what does the Department of Player Safety really do with their suspensions argument, they've been managing games like that for decades, and you know what we still get? Nonsense. That happens in games.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to prevent it.
So as an official, though, it's your job to make sure a powder keg doesn't explode. If it means making a call that, by the book, isn't 100% right, it's probably the right thing to do it. But if you just want to have a world where you do everything by the book, and this is what the book says, then go ahead. You'll have 60 minutes of power play. It is, because on every single play, you could call a penalty. You could.
Chuck Gormley. We were talking about how important that win was for the Capitals last night.
I think we might have punted on Chuck for the show. I think we got two good minutes. There we go. We have Chuck back.
Hey, Chuck, we were discussing how big that win was for the Capitals last night.
Yeah, I think we're done with Chuck.
All right, let's punt on Chuck.
I think we're punting on Chuck. You know what? That was a big.
Chuck does his work from the Verizon Center, and obviously Verizon is doing a hell of a job right now in facilitating this conversation. Hey, Maddie, we're punting on Chuck.
Yeah, we've gone through bad.
We're going to punt the Chuck.
By the way, are we doing postal today?
Yeah, we are. Well, okay. I think we already did.
I think you did.
You were just as mad. Don't put this on me.
Oh, I'm so sick of the conversation about game management calls. You just got to accept what's there, Wish.
I refuse to.
I know you do. But you know what, though?
I was an early adopter of shootout hate. I'll do the same thing to game management calls. I'll carry that battle flag.
So you've been doing that since... When did you first start watching hockey? How old were you?
Through my mommy's belly button.
And then you're like, damn it, Hood, what kind of call is that?
I'm like, wow, this game is super violent.
This is awesome.
This is awesome.
And the puck's going east and west. Wow, what happened to it? How come it only goes north-south now?
Why don't they wear hats to protect their heads from that? It's not about funny. Listen, I showed an amazing amount of restraint on Peel this morning. I didn't put up a new post on Peel. Everybody was asking me to.
Why?
You had the entirety of social media mocking that call last night.
Because the entirety of social media is just in the business of confirmation bias.
It's confirmation bias.
They picked one guy.
If that was Don Van Massenhoven, people would have thought that was an accurate, correct, good call for the game.
No, but they would have said, oh, well, bad call, move along.
Oh, so you're saying they're putting extra mustard on the fastball because it's Tim Peel.
Yeah, because of all the blogs that have been written about him, which contain historical inaccuracies.
I think you greatly overrate my reach and ability here. And I think you also
Number 99 on the People of Power and Influence, according to the Hockey News.
And you also...
For the last 5 years.
Yeah, listen, I am not the Columbus of Tim Peel. Tim Peel was greatly criticized well before I wrote a single post about Tim Peel.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to Kukla's Corner and look back at the post from when Peel would blow a goalie interference call or miss a goal. Tim Peel has outlived the Greg Wyshynski on this controversy.
I will start taking Peel criticism seriously from people that cover the entire spectrum of officials, not just one. Until then, it's strictly confirmation bias. That's all it is.
Oh. I thought I was on best behavior this morning, not engaging in all that Tim Peel thing, and then you had to go and start yelling.
I just said I was fine with the call.
Game last night was a pretty important one, I thought, for the Caps. They're starting to play.
Here's what's interesting about that game.
This Penguins team a little bit like maybe they believe that they can.
Pens keep saying they want to get tougher, and I guess in their minds, the Max LaPierre deal was a move to get tougher, and Washington just handed it to them.
Yeah, it did.
Just fed them. Like, over and over again.
What did you think of the LaPierre trade, by the way? I don't think we talked about that.
I think it's interesting considering, and again, this goes back to Junior, where Max LaPierre used to chase Crosby around the ice. Like, in Junior, when the Rocket played the Oceanique, it's as close as I ever saw Crosby to blowing a gasket. Like, honestly, like LaPierre would drive Crosby insane in junior.
Oh, you're saying it's interesting in the sense that they're adding.
They're in the same room. I think LaPierre was asked about that. So, oh, I'll buy him dinner and everything will be okay. Although you don't make a move like that. Like, how many moves do you think Jim Rutherford makes without running it by the big guy?
None.
Because the last thing you want to do is, like Crosby to pick up his iPhone and go, we just traded for who?
Oh, I thought you meant Mario.
Oh, no. Although Mario, too. I was surprised. I mean, I thought that, the face-off percentages are probably a wash. I mean, the justification for bringing Max LaPierre in as a tougher player, I'm not necessarily buying. I never saw Max LaPierre as a tougher player. I saw someone who will distract the other team.
Well, that's the question, right? At this point on that roster, who are the pains in the ass for the Penguins?
Steve Downey and Maxime LaPierre.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty good duo right there. The Blues have like nine of them, so they could easily afford to trade one of them.
Okay. Yeah, we got out. We're fine. We'll get rid of LaPierre.
And then they get Gotch, who's going to be a decent addition to the bottom six. But, yeah. Like, when the Penguins were good... You know, you had your Matt Cooks, you had your Max Talbots, you had your Jarkko Ruotus, you had your Brooks Orpik doing what Orpik did. You had a lot of guys on the team that could really piss you off a little bit. I think they're too easy to play against now, the Penguins. They're too easy to play against, and adding a little bit of sandpaper to that lineup, albeit someone who, as every stat head has pointed out, is not exactly an improvement on your possession numbers.
Yeah.
Is ultimately a good thing. I like this move for both teams. The Blues did not have to have LaPierre in that lineup because he's a redundancy, and the Penguins are
Washington
adding a little cayenne to their vanilla because they're way too easy to play against.
Washington goes into that. Washington leaves that game last night and goes into the locker room feeling really good about themselves for a lot of reasons. One, Ovechkin gets a pair of goals and leads the NHL in goal scoring right now, and two. There's something that happens, again, we got a lot of, like, this may be like ape DNA, but, like, you go back into the locker room after a tough game where you've won your fights and you've handed it to them and you blanked the other team. Like, really, dude, you go into that dressing room feeling really good about yourself and really good about your team and really good about your teammates. Games like that, and I've been part of it in, you know, my little stupid whatever hockey career. When you win games like that and there's that level of violence, I'm sorry, but it raises your team up a notch.
Yeah, it does.
It does, man. No,
for sure. It really does.
Sitting next to those dudes, and yeah, I got a fat lip, but man, you hand those uppercuts. Oh, wow, too much too soon. Like, something happens.
If you're the Capitals, do you want Pittsburgh in the first round?
What are my other options?
Well, looking at where they are right now in the standings and looking at what will probably happen in the East for
you're
the rest of the
probably
the rest of the
getting
way, you're looking at either Pittsburgh.
You're looking at either Pittsburgh or the Rangers.
Pittsburgh, well, no. I mean,
oh, no, because if they bow. Yeah. No, you're right. If they go, if they go the other way.
You might be looking at the Islanders or the Red Wings or Tampa. You've got a lot of different options. I'll tell you this. I mean, I know Capitals fans probably feel pretty good about life right now. But I, you know, the Penguins are a team that you wear down. I wouldn't want to see them in the first round. I want to see them after they get roughed up a little bit by somebody before I play them.
Columbus nicked them a lot last year, too.
They did. That was a hard series, man. And then they go into that Rangers series, and all Sid feels is Mark Stahl's stick on the back of his neck the entire series.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I mean, you need to wear this team down a little bit before you see them. So as gung-ho as Capitals fans would probably be about playing Pittsburgh, and I think they match up pretty well against Pittsburgh now this season.
Especially I hope so, because that would be a fun one. I just look at it from a fan point of view, given what we saw last night and how that really can, you know, qualify as a Wednesday night rivalry game. I want to see that. I want to see it.
Yeah,
I want to see it in the playoffs.
Now you got a couple ringers on there, too, with Orpik and Niskanen. They know that team pretty well.
Oh, I know. And it's like the guys that walked across the floor, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Holtby's red hot against a goaltender with all the question marks. And is Sidney going to, you know, lose his mind? Is it going to be a new Brandon Dubinsky chasing him around the ice?
Everything is set up for the first round of these playoffs to be amazing if they break the right way. You could get the Islanders and Rangers, the Capitals and Penguins, Yzerman versus Detroit, and Boston versus Montreal in the East.
Yep, that's right. You could, tonight's a fat. I mean, we're going to doubleheader tonight, doing Sharks and Ducks, and also doing Islanders and the Boston Bruins, which may be an opening round playoff matchup. Then you have the Johnny Boychuk story.
Uh huh. I'm okay with the East being set right now, all due respect to the Panthers.
Who have just lost, what, 5 in a row? Damn it!
Yeah, it's not exactly the most scintillating playoff chase.
But Alex Petrovic is playing his first game of the season tonight against the Jackets. Come on, Petrovic's in.
Yay. All right, listen, before we get to Going Postal, let's listen to a little bit of the Marty Brodeur press conference from today.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure everybody was listening to it. Let's listen back to it because it's what we do here on the show. Hey, here is the Marty Brodeur press conference from St. Louis.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank everyone for coming today. We're here to congratulate Marty on a fabulous career and wish you nothing but the best moving forward. Marty's agreed to join our organization as the senior advisor to the general manager. He's going to travel with our team on a daily basis. He's going to interact with our players and our coaches. Our goals are very simple here in St. Louis with this team. It's to prepare and be competitive to win a Stanley Cup and ultimately win a Stanley Cup. When I look up here and you see the number of Stanley Cups on this stage, all these people we can tap into as we learn and we move forward. So we're very excited to have Marty join our organization in a different capacity. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Marty for some brief comments.
Here we go. Surrounded by Blues Hall of Famers, by the way, up there. How exciting.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. Also, I want to take the opportunity to thank everybody that sent me messages in the last 48 hours. I didn't respond back to you guys, but there was a reason for it.
Mostly New Jersey.
But all my friends, all the ex-teammates and present teammates, I really appreciate the kind words. This is a great day for me. I'm excited to start a new chapter in my hockey career. This is something I've been thinking about for a long time, and this is a great opportunity that the St. Louis Blues organization, Todd Stillman and Doug Armstrong, that are giving me and trusting me into doing In the same token, this is going to be something that is going to be as close as a hockey player. I'll be able to be involved with the hockey operation and then being close with the guys and the coaches. And
so he'll
the
be
managers.
Around the team but so, not actually be
this
playing.
This could be a great challenge.
No, he made the lap like here. No, he made the lap here.
Don't you want to hear about my career a little bit.
I was going to say, kind of like those 7 games.
You know, this it was a good decision for me to make. It's been something that... you know, throughout the year, you know, July 1st came and didn't get really many opportunities. I was a little selective on the teams that I wanted to play for. And, you know, time went by and I was really thinking about retirement. You know, came November, like for me was, you know, I wanted to play, but I knew the opportunity would have been a little harder. And finally I got a phone call. One of the teams that were on top of my list was the St. Louis Blues. And again, I jumped in right away. Had a blast for the month and a half I was here. Was treated with as much respect as anybody else, and they really took me in and their family. And for me, that meant a lot. And when the goalie's situation got healthy, and I think everybody has to understand that there was no promises from the organization towards me. You know, they have two solid goaltender. And so for me to come in and help them out was a great opportunity for me to get back in the game and see if I still like it and still can play the game. And both questions were answered. You know, I know I can play.
No.
I know I still can have fun with this game.
No,
and you know, and for me, just the fact that they got healthy was harder for me to stay around. You know, I'm a competitive guy. It was hard to stay on the sideline. And that's why, you know, I decided to take my, you know, and take my retirement.
Okay, did you get that note from the St. Louis Blues? Check your iPhone. Do you have it handy? Just got a press release here from St. Louis.
To say what?
The St. Louis Blues have traded Vladimir Tarasenko to New Jersey for defenseman Adam Larsson. It's a shocker there.
You saying he's a sleeper agent? Did you have a problem with him not saying New Jersey and all that?
I did.
You kind of did.
I did.
Yeah. It's a little weird.
I get that you're upset. Although he did clarify, say, oh, me and Lou are fine. We're on good terms. Anyone that says otherwise doesn't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. And you know, he's obviously coming back. But just like,
can you just say it? Give him
some. Acknowledge where you were for 21 seasons?
Yeah. Although, are they planning at the end of the year another retirement ceremony for Marty in New Jersey?
Probably.
Can you really do two? Can you really do two with two teams?
Sure you can. One is the spiteful one and one is the real one.
Oh, man.
Isn't that weird, though? It's like...
He's dropping the puck tonight, too, eh? Right? I get that right.
He's dropping the puck in St. Louis too.
Oh, by the way,
joining that pantheon of legendary St. Louis Blues puck droppers that includes Sarah Palin.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. That was the Palin curse, where Legacy tripped over the rug and he got injured.
Oh, that's right. Remember she was she was voodoo for everybody. I forgot about that.
All because Dave Checketts was a huge Republican donor. Yeah. He had Sarah Palin come out and drop the puck. Nah, I don't know. It's weird he didn't say it. The whole thing felt very spiteful. But like I said before, it's like, whatever. Get it out of your system now. You're going to be a Devil. Your legacy is in New Jersey. It's not going to be a thing that continues throughout the entirety of his retirement. He's a Devil.
It's so weird.
Right?
It's just a weird one. It really is. It's a tough one to wrap your head around. Just seeing him with that backdrop. 7 games.
Did you see the picture that Elliot tweeted before?
Oh, no,
there was a giant video screen outside of the Opera Hall there in St. Louis that said, thank you, Marty.
For what? 7 games?
When do we turn this around about the St. Louis Blues? Like, you got nothing else going on? You got to do this?
How many games is
Seven Steve, games?
How many games? Hang on, just let me do a quick check here. How long did Steve D'Urbano play with St. Louis? Steve D'Urbano played. Where are we here? How many games did he play with the Blues? He was the guy that mooned the crowd at MSG.
You know what it reminds me of? And I don't mean to disparage Blues fans, except I'm going to totally do it. It reminds me of when, like, an AHL team gets a guy with a huge contract demoted to them, and then they put up giant, like, "Welcome, Mike Richards, to Manchester," things on their website. But we all know what it is. It's like a guy who, because of the circumstances of his career, was forced to come there because there was no other option.
So like Wade Redden.
And yet,
Wade Redden.
Yeah, it's like that entire press conference was a Wade Redden Connecticut Wolfpack jersey.
Steve Dabrowski, 13 games, 103 penalty minutes. Steve Dabrowski played more games for St. Louis. Marty
Thank you, Marty.
13 games, mooned the crowd at MSG during a bench-clearing brawl. Oh, no, wait a minute. No, before that, sorry. 73-74, they played 36. And then before they played 49. Okay, I didn't look at early on the career. But to end the career, the 13 games.
Now you're making me look up something really important.
What are you looking up?
So vamp for me for a second.
We're just going to tap dance here for a second.
Please do.
While you look up something fascinating.
So Marty played 7 games for the St. Louis Blues. Is that true?
Yeah.
Well, that's 2 fewer games than Esa Tikkanen played for the Devils.
Thank you, Esa.
And then we, after we acquired him from the Blues.
Yeah.
Wow. What pick that was, by the way? 95, November 95. Traded to New Jersey by St. Louis for New Jersey's third round choice. Later traded to Colorado, where Colorado selected Ville Niemenen.
Oh, no way. All right.
That's right.
Are you going down the HockeyDB wormhole right now?
No, I'm not going to do that.
It's fun.
I will say that he was traded to the Rangers by Edmonton for Doug Weight in 93, setting up that 94 Cup run. See, that's the one thing about that Cup that I'll give the Rangers credit for. Maybe the only thing is it's not as if they didn't trade away assets to get those players. We always
Oh no, they traded away. Yeah. Neil Smith traded away.
We always kind of mock the Edmonton sell off and stuff like that. But it's not as if Doug Weight, Tony Amonte, I think was also a guy who left via trade.
Yeah.
Like they definitely dealt away a bunch of guys of some renown and some potential to build that team.
Now, one of the big issues around that team, though, was still Mark Messier going to management and saying, fire Roger Nilsson. We can't win with Roger Nilsson behind the bench because Messier didn't like the line matching. He wanted to be out there against the big guys, and Nilsson wanted to put his checkers out there against the big guys. And Messier found that an affront to everything that he understood about hockey and said, that's it, fire him. I remember talking to Neil about that a couple weeks ago. I said, what was it like when Messier came into your office and told you to fire Roger Nilsson? And Neil's like, oh my God, I'm this young executive in my 30s, and there's Mark Messier saying, fire the coach right now. We can't win with this guy. And I'm like, oh God, what do I do?
Brian Palmer, Valerie Bure played 11 total games for the Blues. Where's his parade?
I don't even remember that. Did Valerie Bure play with the Blues?
Pack writes in, Jim Carrey played 4 games for the Blues.
Oh yeah.
Hey, I'll give St. Louis this, man. They didn't retire his number. Cough, Colorado.
Wow, you got a Ray Bourque shot there?
Damn right. All right, with the remaining time in this show, which has been equal parts sublime and contentious, it's time for a Wednesday favorite.
I think it's been fun.
On Thursday.
I think it's been fun.
You want to do a mailbag segment every week?
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Not that deep.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog at Yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
We want to remind everybody that the official Merrick versus Wyshynski t-shirts are available. And in fact, part of the money goes to He Fights Cancer. I have the t-shirt thing linked off the post for our podcast on Puck Daddy. But you could also check back in my feed on Twitter. I'll tweet it out later on too.
We've sold like 61 of them.
We've sold about 70 shirts so far.
Ooh.
Very excited to see people tweeting out the receipts from their stuff, mainly because they forget to take their credit card information off. And
and by the way, Greg and I don't make a single dime off of
this. We do not. Just keeping with the tradition of the rest of this very program.
Of which I am proud, Mike.
I know you're a lot more proud about that than I am.
I work in TV. I do already.
I don't work in TV, but once a year. What if that's good? Elliot was asking me if I'm going to be back on trade deadline this year, and I said the same thing to him that I've been saying to everybody. There are literally 500 people that now work for Sportsnet. I doubt they'll need me.
Well, we're trying to get you and me to do radio together in Washington.
Yeah, that's true.
That fell apart. So.
I feel like I'm still part of the family. I just don't feel like.
Talk to Joel? I'll talk to Joel when I go in later on.
Sure,
today.
That'd be fine. I feel like Joel. The guy who does one impression on SNL. And yet still part of the featured players.
That's funny.
Ryan Hunt writes in, Merrick recently said it might be time to say goodbye to his Mark Bathot haircut. Just wondering what
Yeah, might.
Go ahead.
No, he's right. I might have to.
Just wondering what your worst ever hairstyle was, and I am currently rocking a shorter version of what Wish might know as the Qui-Gon Jinn, which is pretty hilarious. Oh, that's a good Phantom Menace reference. I didn't have a bad haircut per se, but I definitely had a goatee in college, which was regrettable because I probably put on, I'd say, roughly 25 pounds in college. So it was, I looked like a longshoreman. It was really, it was terrible.
Okay, guess which style I had? 1992, I was 22 years old at university. What do you think I had? And I played hockey.
Oh, you had a crazy mullet.
100%.
Wow.
Like down to the shoulders and tight and bright up top. Oh!
Had that sick flow.
God bless you, Jane, for still dating me at that point.
Jeez. Hey, Jeff and Greg, there's a radio show in the UK called Desert Island Discs where guests on the show discuss what music, book, and luxury item they would bring with them if they were stranded on a desert island. What album, book, or book/film... and luxury item would you bring with you? As always, love the podcast. Book for me. Well, I mean, I read The Game every year. I don't know if that would be the book I bring, though.
I don't know if I'd bring that one.
I would probably
I don't know
have
if
to
I'd bring a hockey.
Book. I would bring probably like the Onion compendium of the history according to the Onion book. I forget the name of it. Our Dumb History, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Just for chuckles. And book film. The film I would bring is Die Hard, obviously. And the luxury item I would bring is a fucking boat.
Just like Gilligan's Island, they can do anything except fix the frickin' boat. look what you've done on the frickin' island. Can you fix the frickin' boat now, please? Book's a tough one. Probably one of my hippie spiritual books, but if not that, then the book that I keep coming back to, which is Moby Dick by Herman Melville. Yeah, I love that book. Oh, my God. I've read that so many times. As far as, well, movie is Jaws. Although if I'm stranded on a desert island, maybe I shouldn't bring Jaws. Being surrounded by water. I may have to rethink that one.
Well, it's still a better choice than Castaway.
That is still a better choice than Castaway. That's a good point. And what was the other one? Luxury item?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Really, it does eliminate anything that would take electricity.
So. What's on the island, and can I make a fire?
Yeah, right. Luxury item. A blowtorch.
Let's think of something else.
Luxury item. Iron Man suit.
A luxury item. A bong.
There you go. I mean, you can make that out of a coconut.
You can do that out of a coconut. That's true. Yeah, I don't need to do that. I don't know. Luxury item.
I often wonder.
Really need anything.
Ever see that DiCaprio? Well, why am I even asking this question? There's a Leonardo DiCaprio movie called The Beach.
Yeah, okay. Left hand shot, right hand shot.
He finds a map to this beach where all these hippies end up, or these like stoners end up, because it is an island that drug lords basically run with giant fields of marijuana.
What?
Yeah, and. Are there giant fields of marijuana?
Matt,
he shouldn't.
For those that couldn't hear Matt, he said that his roommate went there in Thailand.
He said,
exactly. Matt Brown, Peppermint Patty. Why didn't you go, Matty?
I'm not allowed in Thailand.
Matty's not allowed in Thailand. Right, okay, I forgot about that.
goes back to my Nam days.
Oh, man, the flashbacks, man. Johan Lindahl writes in from Sweden. Did any of the stat gurus you know ever get around to checking the possible correlation between injuries and puck possession you talked about a couple months ago?
A couple guys did and shot it down. Although the reasoning I'm still... my buddy Matt did it at 67 Sound, and he's right on the mark about this kind of stuff, too. And I think Birch had a look at it as well, though I should check back with him. And they seem to indicate that there was not a correlation between the two. Although, anecdotally, doesn't it make sense?
It would, yeah.
When do you get hit? When you hold the puck.
Jim Flanagan writes in, who is the best owner in the NHL? Jacobs, Vinnick, Anschutz, Molson, Lemieux. The worst, does Melnick have any competition? Well, let's start with the bad first. Yes. As long as Daryl Cates is taking breaths and representing the Edmonton Oilers as their financial benefactor, Eugene Melnick would, in fact, have competition for worst owner in the league.
Worst owner in the league. See, I see worst a couple of different ways. One, too meddling, and two, absentee.
I think absentee is worse.
I think absentee is worse. Like, Thomas Golisano was awful.
Yeah.
And he would only show up to make sure the ticket prices were at a threshold where they could qualify for revenue sharing. Like, guy.
Amongst the best, I mean, worst is whatever, but, like, amongst the best, I mean, I think Rocky Wirtz would have to be up there.
Yeah. What's that?
I don't know what the hell it is.
What was that? Maddie, what are you doing? Are you doing sound effects? Oh, is it?
Oh.
Maddie left his mic hot, so we have sound effects in our ears.
Oh, man.
Hey,
Maddie, watch out for those pop-ups, man. It's just idea autoplay. You don't know where they are. Listen, Rocky Wirtz is up there.
Mike Ilitch up there, Mr. I.
Mike Ilitch is up there. Jeff Molson's up there for me. Vinnick has been great. I think we're all forgetting a little gentleman by the name of Vinny Viola with the Florida Panthers.
Done a good job. Got a hand to the Violas. That's true.
Not just it. Like, there's three subsets. There's shitty owners, there's good owners, and then there's owners that just, you got to give them some credit for trying. Vinny's trying. Ed Snyder may not necessarily be everybody's cup of tea, but you can't say that guy doesn't care.
Oh, my
God. He
doesn't
try. He cares too much, maybe.
And always has. And has been a hands-on guy pretty much from day one. Like, he was the guy pretty much that said after the Simone Nolet incident, like, that's it, no more getting beaten up. I'm sick of this.
Yeah. So guys like, I'm sorry, eating salsa. Guys like Snyder and guys like.
Hang on. Who just eats salsa?
Well, I'm eating a chip with salsa.
Oh, okay. I'm eating salsa. What? Who eats salsa?
Ruby made homemade salsa, so it's here, and I had to have a piece of it.
How hot?
Smoking hot. Oh, the salsa's pretty hot, too.
Oh, jeez.
I would say that guys like Ed Snyder and Ted Leonsis are in their own category of maybe not being the most effective owners, but definitely caring.
But doesn't it always change?
Like, in what way?
Well, I mean...
Oh, are you saying... Oh, so it's a George... Like, the George Steinbrenner thing.
Yeah.
Like, how Steinbrenner was a meddling... evil, sinister, hiring private detectives to go after his own players, dude.
Yeah, because
and then when the Yankees won, he's like, St. George.
Yeah, look at, he's sage, wise baseball man. But here's the thing about the NHL now. How many huge deals, like franchise-changing deals, they think are made without the owner having to sign off on it?
Yeah.
Whether it's a buyout, whether it's a big trade, whether it's a signing on July 1st. I mean, it goes more than just, you know, you see him for a Christmas card and then approving budgets at the end of the year. Like, guys now are more hands-on than ever. And an owner's only a problem when the decisions that are made are bad. Then he's a meddling owner.
Yeah.
But you look at some of the great moves Boston has made. You don't think the Jacobs family's been involved in those decisions?
Yeah.
100%.
Two more real quick. Dedicated listener John D. writes in. Thought you might do one of those Google things today and replace your homepage with a giant teardrop. Verdor.
It's not a bad one for you today, is it, Wish?
No.
You're all right.
That's because I find his career fascinating. And I've chosen to focus on his impact on the Devils and his impact on hockey and his career and everything else versus the sort of tabloidy, thing with the Blues happening.
You know what I'm disappointed in? That he didn't have more... Well, it's interesting, because if you look at a lot of Canadian kids, specific goaltenders, they'll say that Marty Brodeur was their favorite goaltender, but yeah. no one plays his style.
No one plays his style,
that's
right.
Disappointing. Everyone still plays that... It's effective, but that boring-ass butterfly style, which is more to the Patrick Roy side of the fence. But so many Marty Brodeur fans from coast to coast, as far as young goaltenders go, but no one plays that style.
Like,
that's what's disappointing. That he didn't have more... Sure, by puck handling, absolutely. But the style of goaltending hasn't caught on in Canada.
Like, due respect to Solani, but there have been better goal scorers in the last 20 years. And due respect to Modano...
100%.
But there have been better centers in the last 20 years.
Yep.
When Lidstrom retired and when Marty retires, I mean, this is, you know, for the era that we've all been watching puck, man, last 20 years, 25 years, this is on the level of Gretzky. This is on the level of the best at what they did. Patrick Roy, Marty Brodeur, Dominic Hasek, Ray Bourque, Nick Lidstrom.
I wouldn't throw Bourque into that. I wouldn't throw Bourque into that mix. I'm with you on all those guys except for Bourque.
So, what do you think? Do you think Niedermeyer was the bigger retirement than Bourque?
100%, 100%.
Oof.
Oh yeah, I'll take Niedermeyer over Bourque any day of the week. Going
away.
We have
to have Joe Haggerty on that.
That's fine.
Episode.
I'm cool with that. I'll go Bourque Niedermeyer with anybody. I'll take Niedermeyer every day of the week.
This is a big one. This is a big day, and it sucks that a lot of the attention has been given rather not to his accomplishments and how they'll never be touched, but on this whole "what did he say to Lou" kind of thing. But that's Lou's and Marty's own doing. I mean, that's just the way that's what it is. I mean, that's the way it played out, and they kind of made that. Lastly, Adam Perugino writes in. Outside of hockey, are there any sports that you find yourselves paying a lot of attention to recently?
I think I've said this before. If it weren't for hockey, I don't know that I'd really be much of a sports fan. Although, for big fights, man, I'm always watching UFC. Like, I'll watch Diaz and Anderson this weekend. That's probably my second one. But
yeah,
I used to love baseball as a kid, and at times I really dig watching NLL, but... Yeah.
The only sports, I think I said this, the only sports I live and die with are football and hockey. I'm going to a Nets game with my dad on Monday, so that'll get my little basketball on. But the Nets are atrocious, so I don't think that really matters. As a Mets fan, I'm in cryo sleep right now as a Mets fan. But like I'll say this, when I made the mistake of driving 12 hours from Columbus back to Manhattan for 8 inches of snow on Monday, when I made that gigantic mistake, I did listen to a lot of... Mike Francesa's show on FAN here in New York about Deflategate. And, you know, I'm a football fan. I follow it all. I don't really marinate in sports talk radio on things other than hockey. And it was a lot of fun to hear the abject craziness of the sports talk radio caller discussing this controversy with there's no way they can let Belichick coach that game. I mean, he's a cheater. He's a pox on the whole league. I'll hang up and listen. Like, this, it's so nonsensical. And you know, the Marshawn Lynch stuff, too, in the last couple of days. Like, it may not necessarily be a different sport, but in my eyes it is. It's the sport of listening to other people talk about football is the sport that I've been paying attention to recently.
Ooh. I don't know, because there's only so much, like, call-in sports talk radio I can handle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's only so much of it that I can put up with. But for some of the bigger controversies, like I'll always hand it to guys like here at the Fan. Okay. I'm doing the show from the Fan, Sportsnet 590. And I give it to Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne, who handle the pre and post game shows for the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
Oh, cause I would imagine it's gotta be torture going to the phones in the middle of this slide. Honestly, it really is. Because you've not just got the weight of like a 7-game losing streak, or what is it, like lose a 15 of the last 18, whatever the stat is.
Yeah.
You've got pent up frustration for many of these people since the day they were born. Since
yeah.
they do have a... And there is the report producer who has to screen the calls. That is Matt Brown who has to handle all these guys. But, man, that is, you earn your money. Like, Wish.
But,
like,
listen,
hang on. Wish. If you and I were paid to do this podcast, could we really say we earned the money? No. It's an hour and change of hanging out and having fun, having some laughs, and sometimes swearing at each other about obscure
things. But, dude, what about the three hours of prep we do before each show?
Oh, yes, that's right. Staring at things, watching a hockey game, reading a blog. Oh, no, honey, I'm doing show prep. Okay, like, that's not earning your money. That's essentially stealing money. That's like robbing the bank and not having to wear a mask. But Stalick and Osborne here on The Fan doing the pre and post. That's earning your money.
Yeah.
Like, you're tired at the end of the shift. Like, you do 2 hours of a post-game show, you go home exhausted.
Having listened to a lot of Toronto Sports Talk Radio, though, I will say that there is a difference between that and New York and Philly, which is it's anger. I think there's a lot more defeatism amongst Sports Talk Radio callers in Toronto. There's a lot of sort of exasperation. I think there's also a lot of delusion. A lot of delusion, especially as far as value of players goes.
That's every market. You know that. That's every market. Yeah. I know what you mean, but that's every market. Like, every market has their trade Ponikarovsky for Jager crew. I get that. Oh, we'll throw in a pick, too. We'll throw in a pick.
God,
like,
I miss
you get that.
When I was a kid, I used to listen to sports talk radio all the time from, like, midnight to 6 a.m., as the great Katie Baker knows, listening to Steve Summers. And I would love... It would always be Mets fans for some reason that would call in with trade scenarios, and it was always like, "Well, why don't we give them a shitty player one, shitty player two, double A pitcher three for Barry Bonds?" I'll hang up and listen. They're just like, "What the fuck? Why are you wasting everybody's time? You actually think this is..."
Blame the producer. You know? Let them on. The producer, like, are you call screening or call allowing? What I always
say. The difference between New York and Philly sports talk radio was always the New York host would always be like, "Well, you know, would love to see Barry Bonds in left field for the New York Mets. No question, he would improve the team. But I think you probably have to give up a little bit more than that." If you asked that, if you did that in Philly, if you're a Philly caller and you're calling into like Howard Eskin's show, and you were like, you know, shitty player 1-2, double A pitcher, traded for, you know, name the, you know, Alex Rodriguez in his prime or whatever, you would hear this. You'd hear the end of the call would be like, "And I think that's a trade that they can get. The Phillies can get it done. I'll hang up and listen." And then you hear this.
That's a very Bob McCowan reaction right there.
And then you would hear, "Joe and Philly, you're next."
Just not even going to grace it with an answer.
Not even a second.
It's
like doing political talk radio and someone just called up and swore that Obama got elected because of aliens. Like, you just don't even address it. You just move on to the next one.
Do I waste breaths that I could be using to further my life? Or do I take the next caller?
All right. Well, listen, good news for you for tomorrow. I am traveling tomorrow, so there will be no show on my end, which means that whether you do a show or not, there will be no game show Friday.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing. Where are you going tomorrow?
I'm just heading down to D.C.
Nice. Oh, look at you.
And well, you know, it'll be a better trip this time because I won't be in a Chevy rented from Avis.
Do you?
The wheels were 10-speed bike wheels trying to go up icy hills in Pennsylvania.
Hey, do you know if, maybe I should just look at this myself, if NHL Network is picking up our Connor McDavid games this weekend? We got Connor twice. We got McDavid and the Otters against Kingston on Friday and then against Ottawa on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
It's always cool because it's a chance, because I host the games, right? So it's always a chance where I can talk to American hockey fans about CHL hockey. And this is McDavid weekend, essentially, with two games from the Otters.
If you are on NHL Network this weekend and we all promise to watch you, will you drop a shampoo of a baby bear reference during your...
You know, it's funny because...
Just let us know we're there.
What I do with the kids, pulling the curtain back a little bit here. What I'll do with the kids when, if like they're up and Claire will send me a text saying, "Hey, you know, the kids are watching. What's the code word going to be?" And I'll say like pineapple or something like that. And I'll work that into the sentence And that'll be sort of dad's little code to talk to the kids. And they'll see it and go, yeah, woo, dad said the code word. Yeah, way to go. Man, if I could work in shampoo a baby bear. Okay, you know what?
You remember?
Let me know if NHL Network is airing this thing. I'll see if I
will.
Get shampoo baby bear. All right.
As a signal to us, the loyal Merrick fans. By the way,
MVSW fans.
When I dropped that F-bomb on you before, that was the code word for my daughter. I knew she was listening. So that's the only reason I did it.
Oh, I thought when you say stomach pancakes, it's like a nod to your date and what you got planned for the weekend.
Wow.
Thanks.
Wow. On that note.
On that lovely note.
Everybody, thank you for a fun week. Again, t-shirts.
Thank
you. I'll tweet it out right now.
Man. Thanks. It's awesome.
And also, like, this is one of those deals where we often talk about how we have absolutely no concept who listens to this show. And a couple of the first purchases of the t-shirts, like one was in Australia.
Gemma.
Which is
Gemma.
And one was in the UK.
Don't know who that would be. I talk to people online from the UK. So do you. Rob McGregor is a great one. Yeah. Our boy. Podcast boy.
Well, it's just exciting. I want to see a heat map of all the purchases. All 70.
All right. You got that, Patrick? I'm all mapped out.
Heat map. I also would like to know who is buying the... International Society of Hockey Geeks shirts versus the incredible MVSW periodic table shirt. Did you see one of the designs that someone suggested on Twitter? The 69, it's hilarious.
Oh, it's
one.
The best. That's
pretty good. Pretty damn good.
Patrick, get on that.
That's pretty good.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, now that we have a store, forget about it. You are going to be inundated with different designs.
Sorry, Patrick. Every stupid idea Greg and I have, sober or otherwise, call Pat. The answer is going to be now between you and me. Wish, call Patrick.
Yep.
Tweet Patrick.
And also, follow Puck Daddy today. Josh is going to have all the details on the big AHL Western expansion. Maddie, if we can, maybe a little Dave Andrews action on Monday to talk about the big shift. And also, so I can just take it out and spank it, talking about 3-on-3 overtime and how it's killing the shootout.
Oh, like it owes you money, Wish. Like it owes you money.
Yeah, there's a visual.
Treat yourself like a pencil sharpener over the 3-on-3. Yeah,
everybody,
great.
Have a great weekend. Thank you so much for all the things you've done for us this week. And
thank you.
Oh, and enjoy the Super Bowl. Merrick, do you have a Super Bowl pick?
I really don't like either team. I was thinking about this the other day. I hate this Super Bowl. Every year I can usually pick one team that I kind of like the stories or kind of like a couple of players or whatever. This year I really don't like either team.
I hate the Patriots as a Jets fan, but I also like Pete Carroll more than I like Bill Belichick, so I'll go with Pete Carroll and the Seahawks.
Back-to-back. When's the last back-to-back? I don't know. When's the last back-to-back Super Bowl champion, Wish? Do you know?
Last back-to-back Super Bowl champion?
San Fran?
Cowboys?
Was it Cowboys?
Yeah.
Wow, all right.
Well, I mean, I'm familiar with football because I've actually played the game. So, I mean, you know, it's sort of in my blood.
What position did you play in football?
What position did I play in football?
Yeah, I never played.
I was on defense when I played it, but I didn't really play at any level of renown.
But at least you put on the equipment, because I didn't even do that.
I've worn a helmet, yeah.
Really, true. Eh?
It's exciting.
I don't know that... See, my kids are goofy about hockey. Surprise, surprise. But I don't want to be one of those parents like, oh, no, you can't do this for sure, cause something's athletic. I don't know that I want my kids to play football.
Oh, no, I agree with you, man. Like, I think it's...
Oof.
That's a tough one. And that's, you know, as we get a little bit older with the youngins, me and you, I mean, those are discussions you have to start worrying about.
100%, man. Like, yeah. Rugby, I'm still cool with. Lacrosse, I love still, but man, that's rough. Hockey, obviously. I mean, there's going to come a time when checking's part of it, but...
Yeah, not to open up a huge discussion at the end of the show or anything, but
you never do that, huh?
Yep. It's like, I think that's what makes. I think that's the point of demarcation for a lot of people on hockey violence debates is when they have kids that are old enough to play. I think your mind gets changed pretty quickly.
Why? I mean, I think I still maintain one of the reasons why you're starting to see a softening of the NHL, rightly or wrongly, is because a lot of people of influence in the NHL have kids that are aiming for NHL careers. Whether they make it or not is irrelevant. They have kids that are playing at a high level because they've been afforded the luxury of those programs and those experiences, etc. So you have a lot of people in and around the NHL whose kids are either in the NHL or on their way to the NHL. And as a parent, and Greg, you're a parent, many people listening are parents, what's one of your main responsibilities? Protect your kids.
Yeah.
I still think that's one of the big reasons why the societal norms is another one as well, but I still think that's one of the main reasons why the NHL is, you could say, softening or you could say smartening up about how it's played. I think that's a big one.
Well, yeah, I got to go to those participation numbers up in Canada.
It's growing, just not at the rate it is in the States.
Indeed.
Don't worry, man. 2028, that's the draft to watch. Then 2030. two young players coming out of Stouffville hockey program. You're just going to quit my job on Monday, go all in on the kids. What do you think
you
about
should.
That?
Full on hockey
just,
dad.
I'm just going to like, see you later. I'm just going all in 100%. Get the skating instructor, work on the edge work, get the nutritionist, the personal trainer.
Mm-hmm.
All in. You know, TJ's going to be 5 in June. Time to start thinking about the career.
Yeah.
And Brody, he just turned 3. He's got to get serious.
Mm-hmm.
Enough of this fun.
Oh, you would be such an amazing shit shooter with journalists as they scout your kid. Oh, you need it. Do you need a picture of him when he was not? I can get you that picture.
Hang on, I got all these videos. Hang on, let me just text his mom here. Send this video up.
Look at this deke. Yeah, can you do another kid his age that could do that?
Look at that. He's 4. He's toe dragging over the blue line. Look at that. The skates, the blade. Who does that? Who does that? Yeah. Answer: no one. My kid.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, exactly. All right, everybody. See you next week. Bye.